Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patron. This has been another crazy week. In fact, I think this has been a horrendous, terrible week worldwide. More so in the United States, more so in Ferguson, Missouri. And we're going to talk about these things tonight. I may be a bit controversial, but I've got to call them as I see them, because things are happening in this country that bother me deeply. If you wish to call in and discuss any of these matters with me, agree with me, disagree with me, the number is 646-478-5731. I repeat, 646-478-5731. The number is on the screen in front of you. We're going to start with Ferguson tonight. I'm not going to take the time to go into everything that's happened and all the details. We've been buried with it through the media, on television, in the newspapers, on the radio in the last 24 hours, and we're going to get it more in the next 72 hours. You've had enough of that. I just want to give you some Louis Patron thoughts. That's it. Let me start this way. Last night, we saw a prosecutor go on national television, spent 25 minutes explaining the grand jury's return of a no bill, which meant no indictment in the Michael Brown killing. Darryl Wilson, the police officer, was in effect exonerated. It's interesting. This took over 100 days. It doesn't take over 100 days for a grand jury to report. It doesn't take 60 hours of testimony from 73 witnesses. I will tell you, as a retired attorney, having had experience with these matters, a mafia don will be indicted in much fewer hours by fewer witnesses than it took in this situation. No screwing around. This is ridiculous what this prosecutor did and how long it took. There were riots in Ferguson last night, to be expected. 12 buildings were burned. Cars were burned, especially police vehicles. There were in excess of 150 gunshots on the streets of Little Ferguson, Missouri, in the United States of America. I say that was expected last night. We should have expected the riots in the street. That was a bunch of malarkey that, you know, they were talking about, well, each side is talking to each other and just going to be peaceful riots, not riots, peaceful demonstrations. You've got to have riots. You have to have aggravation, attacks, bad stuff happening, fires occurring, gun shooting, when something similar to what occurred in Ferguson happened in Ferguson. It's burn, baby, burn. Yes, burn, baby, burn when something like this happens. It's the only way a group can express themselves, the injustice which has been done to them. I say that the political leaders involved in Ferguson should somehow be indicted, thrown out of office, I don't know why. And this is not foolishness, because you know from point zero, the start of this situation, the police chief, the mayor, the prosecutor, and the governor talked like idiots. They haven't handled this thing properly. They're bigots. It's obvious. This was a bigoted situation. Blacks are disliked. I don't know how you can think any other way from what you saw regarding Ferguson. And these political leaders, these governmental people, did not do their jobs, and some sort of legal action should be taken against them. I know you may think I'm crazy, but we cannot permit people like this to continue. Vote them out of office, but they won't get voted out of office, because I believe everybody in that area thinks like that who is white. This is firm in my mind, and I want to share this point with you. There is no question in my mind. I believe there was a fix-in from the first day, a fix, because a dead black man is not going to put a white police officer in jail in Ferguson, Missouri. You heard me. A dead black man is not going to put a white police officer in jail. Now, this is the beginning. This is not the end, because this is happening all over the United States, all over our America. Police killings have increased. Not the police being killed, but the people they're sworn to protect are being killed by police officers. Something is sick in our society that a situation like this occurs. There's going to be hundreds of more situations like Ferguson, because once it happens, people know they can do this, and they're going to do it in the next place. Who else is going to get involved? I don't think this is just going to be a black situation. I believe there is a disintegration in America of our country. I believe our country is falling apart. I believe our judicial system is falling apart. I wrote about this a couple of months ago in a local newspaper here in Key West. My weekly column was the judiciary is falling apart, the legal system, and I believe our government is too, because all those people in Washington, they're really not beholden to you and me. They're beholden to money, corporate America. I believe with the way the economy is, where we have the 1% and the 99%, where there is no middle class and people don't have enough money, where you have 2.5 million children homeless in the United States, the land of plenty, America, the land of plenty, 2.5 million children homeless. I think soon the poor are going to organize. They tried it a couple of years ago in New York City, if you remember. I forget the name of whatever it was. But my point is, you cannot suppress a group forever. You cannot defecate on a people forever. At some point, they're going to say, enough. And they're going to draw the line in the sand, okay? And it isn't going to be the way Obama drew the line in the sand. These people will stand up for their rights and won't take any crap. And we are going to have more violence in this country. Now, to show you how bad this situation is with police officers killing blacks, are you aware that 2 days ago in Cleveland, a police officer, a rookie police officer, about six months on the force, shot a 12-year-old black boy and killed him? You heard me. 2 days ago, Cleveland, Ohio, a police officer shot a 12-year-old black boy and killed him. Now, here's what happened, basically. Someone called in 911 that they saw these kids playing in the park, and one of them looked like he had a gun. The person who called 911 said, and I listened to this recording, and you can too, it's all over the internet, I think it's a fake. I'm not sure it's a fake or real, but I think it's a fake, but it's sort of scary. No problem. The police went. When they got there, they saw a gun on a table and two little boys, black boys. The police saw, there was only one police officer, two police officers saw the boy pick the gun up off the table and put it in his waistband. Okay? The police officer said, put up your hands. Put your hands up. The boy, 12-year-old boy, reached into his waistband as if to take the gun out, and the police officer shot at him twice, hit him once in the chest, and he died instantly. 12-year-old black boy died instantly. It was a BB gun. Did you hear what I just said? It was a BB gun. A BB gun pistol, a pistol BB gun. The police officer said he didn't know it was a BB gun. And he wasn't aware when the man called in. He said it probably is fake. He thought he was going to get shot. All the policemen now today in this country, whenever anything happens, think they were in danger, that they were going to be killed, because most states, if not all, have a law that if you think you're in danger, you can shoot somebody. Shot a 12-year-old black boy. Let's see what's going to happen in Cleveland. Let's see what's going to happen to this police officer, a rookie cop. I have no sympathy for him. I have no sympathy for the Cleveland Police Department. This man should have been better trained. All right? This man had the opportunity, the news reports say, to have grabbed the gun off the table before the boy put it in his waistband. Why didn't he? He was only 10 feet away. We live in bad times, my friends. And I want to stay with this once more, what happened in Ferguson with the police and in Ferguson. Did you know that while Michael Miller, Michael Brown, rather, has been lying in the grave, and Daryl Wilson has not been working, but he's been out and around. You know one of the things Daryl Wilson did in the last 100 days? He met with some of the biggest names in the news media today, television news personalities who went to visit him in the Ferguson area, sat down and wanted him to come on their shows. So you understand who I'm talking about and the seriousness of this. Matt Lauer, NBC, George Stephanopoulos, ABC, Anderson Cooper, CNN, Don Lemon, CNN, Scott Piley, CBS. Cooper and Lemon have admitted this took place. The others are quiet so far. But the studios, NBC, ABC, they've said this is standard operating procedure. Anytime there's somebody big we want to talk to, our TV personality goes to them and asks them to come on the show. That is not the interview. The talk, by the way, between these people and Daryl Wilson, the police officer, was off the record, which meant that anything Wilson said to them could not be used. And so they haven't commented on anything they heard. But this is stupid, too, because at some point, because this investigation's not over, my friends, you got a federal investigation going on. If Wilson is indicted for any reason, Daryl Wilson is indicted, these TV personalities can be subpoenaed to testify at trial, because whatever he said to them, if it's in conflict with what is said at the trial, they will be brought in to show that somebody's lying, and it's called an admission against interest. They can testify as to what he said. And this will not be, the judge won't say you can't do this, these are reporters, because reporters generally take, they say you can't have me reveal who my sources are. This isn't the source. They knew they were interviewing him. He knew, and it's everybody knows, and that's not a source. This is the person involved. It's not the one who gave them a tip. So that's what's going on, which means, too, my friends, that Daryl Wilson, the police officer, is going to financially gain from this. He's going to be paid for his TV appearances. That's, that's standard procedure. He's probably going to write a book on this thing, and it may very well be a bestseller. This guy's got it made because he shot Michael Brown. I'm going to talk now about chopping heads off, decapitation, beheading. I wrote a column for the newspaper. It gets published tomorrow, Conk Life, on ISIS decapitation. And I want to share that with you now briefly, together with how Saudi Arabia does their beheadings. You should know. This is all very interesting. Let's start first with ISIS. It used to be in the old days that if you wanted to take a person's head off, you took a sword, and with one sweep, the head's gone. Quick, sharp, instantaneous, no pain. Or the guillotine. Put the head in the block, drop the blade, boom, it's all over with. This is not how ISIS has been doing it. You may not be aware. ISIS, with those, three Americans, two British, or whatever it is, they use a small knife or blade, and they saw through the neck of the victim. It is not over. You heard me. They saw through the neck of the victim with a small blade. It's not over instantaneously. It takes about a minute to sever the head. The victim's alive for a portion of that minute. It's called conscious pain and suffering. All right? And very painful, obviously, messy and bloody. What's interesting is other Muslim nations, including Saudi Arabia, that behead, Don't do it that way. There is no one in the Arab world that decapitates, cuts the head off by sawing it with a blade. They all use the sword because it's quick and swift. Only this new group, ISIS, does it this way. Now, why do they do it this way? This is what's important. Why they do it this way? Saw through the neck slowly. It takes a whole minute. It's gory. Because, number one, they want attention. They want attention. It used to be if you hijacked an airplane, if you took a car and loaded it with bombs and drove it into a building, or somebody had, you know, explosives on their body and it's a suicide explosion, this got great newspaper coverage, TV coverage, worldwide. Today when this happens, it's become so, nobody hijacks anymore, it's yesterday's news, but the car bombings, the suicide bombings, they're still with us. You don't read about them on the front page that often, and if they're there, it's just a small article. They're buried somewhere in the back, and it's all over in 24 hours. They're not popular anymore. We've become accustomed to these things. We're not shocked. But we are shocked that they saw a person's head off, and it takes a minute. That is disgusting and gory and sick. That's one. They want attention. They're getting it. They believe also they have a mandate to do this. ISIS believes they have a mandate to do this because the Quran says in a few places, not all over, and what they rely on is a statement in the Quran that says, and I quote, when you meet unbelievers, smite their necks. When you meet unbelievers, smite their necks. Cut their neck, cut their heads off, cut their slice through their throats. That's the second reason they do it, because they believe it's religiously proper. But they don't have to do it with the small knife. They could use the sword. The third reason is, and this is what the psychologists say, and this blows my mind. The person who's doing the slicing, and if you recall, the same person, I believe, has done the killing of the Americans, has beheaded the Americans involved. They relish the act. They get an emotional bang out of it, an emotional kick. The psychologists describe the perpetrator as experiencing a moment of intimacy. It's an intimate experience for the person doing the slicing. They're bad, sick people, I'll tell you. And the only way this is going to go away, by the way, because the war is going to go on for a long time, we all know that, is after a while, they're going to slice so many heads off with a small blade. Media, the news media is not going to pay that much attention to it. They'll report it. And when it goes to the back pages, maybe they'll stop doing this because they're shooting everybody else. They're shooting everybody else or decapitating them with swords. Which now brings me to Saudi Arabia. We all know Saudi Arabia, our friend. I love Saudi Arabia. They've been our friend for years. And look what they did to us the last 20 years. They made sure that the price of gasoline went up and up and up and up. Good friends they have been. Recall also, because no one made a big deal out of this at the time. I'm saying our government did not make a big deal out of it. But 17 of the 21 people involved in 9/11 were citizens of Saudi Arabia. Yes, 17 of them were citizens of Saudi Arabia. Okay, let's see how Saudi Arabia, by the way, beheads more people every year than any other country in the world. ISIS isn't doing that much. What do they do, slice five throats? They're doing it bigger than anybody else, all right? They have, so far this year, 70 people have been beheaded in Saudi Arabia. Last year, 83. Just last week, a Turkish visitor who bought drugs, they're very anti-drug, maybe they do it the right way, I don't know, was convicted, and he lost his head. That shows you that foreigners are not exempt from this type of killings over there. Anyhow, this is their method of execution, their method of choice. They use the sword, though. And I'm going to give you in detail how the execution takes place. But it is the sword, and it's swift. It's one shot. The head's over. No pain and suffering. It's done in public, in a town square. The executioner and the condemned person are dressed in white. The convict, the person to be killed, is blindfolded, handcuffed, generally given a sedative before that person comes out to be beheaded. A plastic tarp 7 feet wide is placed underneath the person to be beheaded because this is very bloody and they don't want a messy situation to clean up. Plus, the heads have a tendency to roll all over the place, and it makes it easier to recover the head this way. Now, one stroke of the sword is kept razor sharp, and again, it's one swing, it's humane, it's not like ISIS with the small knife. The executions, they do several a day sometimes. One day they did up to 10 of them. The sword is kept clean by the executioner, by the way. He keeps it clean. He keeps it sharp. The executioner, this is a full-time job for him. He also uses that sword to cut off hands and feet and tongues because, you know, you steal, they cut off your hands. If you speak against the government or the Koran, they cut off your tongue. So he has to keep it sharp for those purposes. Isn't this horrible? Another thing the executioner does, he and several police officers pray together in the public square for the condemned before they take his head off. I don't think this is bad, the swift use of the sword. I think what the ISIS is doing is barbaric, but what Saudi Arabians are doing isn't. What do we do now? We take them on a gurney in a room. We shoot poison into their veins that's going to kill them. These drugs don't kill them right away, apparently. One man was 35 minutes recently, you recall, before he died. Another one had the same problem. The drugs take a period of time to take effect. Whether it's 30 seconds or 1 minute doesn't mean anything. It's time for pain and suffering, and we have that problem. I think it was more humane when we electrocuted people. At least we put them in the chair, and boom, they were gone. All right? But we do bad things, too, that are sick. The electrocutions, the shots, the chemicals into the body to kill a person. This is just as bad or equal to, in my opinion, as the swift, sharp sword that takes the neck off. I think man is barbaric. I'm against killing people. I'm against the death penalty. Put them in jail for life. Too many innocent people have been killed, my friends. I'm a former attorney. I know the system isn't perfect, and I think you people are becoming aware. But the Saudi Arabia way, obviously, is a better way than the ISIS way. Now I'm going to switch over to genetically modified organisms. I want to share with you now something that is going to shock you. When we talk about companies and GMOs, we generally talk about Monsanto and five or six other big companies that we know are in the business. This is big business, okay? This involves billions of dollars, if not trillions of dollars. All over the world, countries are not They're wising up. They're starting to not permit GMOs to operate within their countries. For example, Russia just banned completely all GMOs. And I'm going to get into that in a second in detail. Latin America and South America, the courts and their congresses are thrown companies like Monsanto out, Monsanto themselves. There are big lawsuits going on all over the world. Most European nations are anti-GMOs and are fighting to keep them out of their countries. Why do we, the United States, seem to like GMOs? Well, it's very simple. These people have money. They represent corporate America. And what has happened to our Congress? You cannot deny that corporate America has bought the Congress of the United States. These people are beholden to those people who give them a lot of money for re-election, take them on these fancy trips with their wives, and who knows what else. And what do? They do the beckoning of the major corporations, the big corporations, especially those. You've got it, that support GMOs. You have to see the laws on the books in the United States of America protecting companies like Monsanto and others. It's next to impossible to get rid of them today. They are so deeply embedded. Their lobbyists did their work well. The corporation spent the necessary money. But we are the only country in the world that is permitting this to happen. Now, let me share with you three companies that are involved with GMOs, which are entering into your body and mine. Okay? No question. Pepsi-Cola. You heard me, Pepsi-Cola. Recently, Pepsi-Cola settled a $9 million class action suit. They make naked juice. False advertising. They said it was all natural and 100% juice. Turned out it was proved that it was full of GMOs, genetically modified organisms. Okay? In addition, you know there's a big fight in this country, state by state, with regard to labeling. Many states, most states, want their any products that have GMOs in it to say it on the label so people know. You and I, when we go to the grocery store, we know what the hell we're buying. Pepsi-Cola spent last year $1.6 million to fight on behalf against these labeling campaigns, $1.6 million. So Pepsi-Cola, one of our friends. Now, let's go to Kellogg's. Kellogg's. They got hit for $5 million settlement in a class action for cashew products, the ones that look so healthy on the shelf, KSHI, all natural, nothing artificial. And they also spent last year $1.6 million to defeat GMO labeling. Okay, what do they use wrong in their stuff? They use 100% GMO corn oil in several of their breakfast cereals. Which brings me now to the third company I want to share with you, and this is the worst of the worst, Nestle's. Nestle's owns Gerber Baby Foods, Gerber Company. Gerber puts GMOs in baby food. This became obvious and apparent in South Africa recently. South Africa got upset. They had a court case decision. GMOs had to be removed from all Gerber baby foods. Gerber did it. They sell baby foods in South Africa, but they do not have GMOs in them anymore. But the baby foods on the shelves in the United States of America, our babies eat, contain soybean oil, soy lecithin, and corn syrup, genetically modified. Would you believe it? And Nestle also spent over $1 million to defeat labeling in the state of Washington alone last year. Russia, by the way, just completely threw all GMOs out, and the president, Dmitry Medvedev, said, if the Americans want to eat GMO products, let them eat them. We do not need to do that. We have enough space and opportunities to produce organic food, quote, unquote. Well, that's the show for this week. I hope you've enjoyed it. There were some interesting things to discuss this week, some challenging items. You may disagree with me, that's your right. Again, I have to call these things as I see them, and I feel strongly about some of the things I spoke about this week. I'm glad you joined me. I hope you'll be back again next week. I realize that most of you listen to the show when it's archived during the week. It's amazing. On Facebook also, and on YouTube. Remember, I wrote a book. I remind you every week, The World Upside Down, a series of essays on topics such as I discussed tonight. If you enjoy the show, you will enjoy the book by the book. Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, The World Upside Down. If you did not enjoy the show, don't buy the book. You will not enjoy it. Thank you again for joining me. I look forward to being with you again next week.